Secretary of State John Kerry asked Syria's government and rebels to take advantage of ongoing United Nations peace talks. He's looking for a ceasefire to allow those groups to work together to defeat those affiliated with Islamic State. Meanwhile, the U.S.-led coalition against ISIS has tightened the noose around the extremists in the last few months. Supply lines and revenue sources have been cut off. The U.S. military says all this is weakening the group militarily. NPR's Alice Fordham reports the move is also hurting civilians in the areas ISIS controls.
Approaching a little patch of grass outside a police station, I see half a dozen women with small children sitting on a rug and a haggard-looking group of men nearby, eager to tell me how they walked here.
For 48 hours, without food or water or sleep.
That's Khalaf Hussein Karam, a man with a deeply lined face, who escaped from his ISIS-held town near Hawija City in northern Iraq over a mountain range, ending up here in the small town of Rubaida.
At the last stage, we had to cross the front lines between the Iraqi army and the ISIS brigades.
They were men, women, and children. At one point, the group got lost and tried to go back home, but when ISIS saw them approaching, they shot and killed some of them. So the survivors had no choice but to find their way to the government-held area.
We crossed the mountain at midnight. We didn't have water or food left, and we slept in the open, in the cold. Our bodies are still stiff from the cold and the tiredness. Then we were received by the Iraqi security forces with open arms.
That might seem like an extraordinary journey, but officials and police tell me something like 20,000 people have walked over those mountains to escape ISIS in the last few months. Captain Dia Abdullah Muhammad is the commander of what he calls the mountain unit of the police. He says families make the perilous journey on a daily basis. They come because of hunger, because they have no money, and a lot of pressure from ISIS, he says. The escaped families tell me how much they hated the brutal rule of ISIS. They speak of beatings for women who weren't totally covered or men caught smoking. The militants were extra suspicious of anyone who'd been in the security forces. And the families also speak of growing hardship in the area controlled by the extremists. We were dying there, says Wijdan Taha Hussein, clustered on the rug with other women and wide-eyed kids, including two of her own. There were shortages of water, electricity, fuel. I ask if there was food. There was, but it was expensive and scarce, she says. ISIS tries to block information getting out of its areas, but in recent months I've heard many accounts of chronic shortages. 7 months ago, Iraq's government decided to stop paying salaries to the government workers in ISIS areas. Those salaries had been taxed by ISIS, and Iraqi officials say they didn't want to give extremists the cash. But that's left probably hundreds of thousands of families without an income. Plus, the US-led coalition has cut off roads that are crucial supply routes. In Baghdad, I meet US Captain Chance McCraw, who acknowledges it's been tough on civilians, but it's taking a toll on ISIS, which he calls by their Arabic nickname, Daesh.
We know life is not good underneath Daesh by any means. It's oppressive. You don't have those resources that are available to you. You don't have the supplies that are coming in. I guess not as prosperous, not as,
sure.
Yeah.
Has it changed in the last, say, three months?
It's definitely getting worse for Daesh. There's been shortages of water in some areas, also the fuel, and then electricity.
McGraw also says ISIS is losing so many fighters in battle, they can't spare so many men to stop civilians escaping. And that could mean more families, like the ones I met fleeing, night by freezing night, over the Hamrin Mountains. Alice Fordham, NPR News, Baghdad.